I'd like to welcome you to our Women on Wednesday series, Education, Advocacy, and Empowerment, celebrating 20 years. A few items before we get started, please turn off any pagers or cell phones and remain in your seats quietly until 12:50. Also, if you could please fill out an evaluation form, we do use this for future programming. Our session today is titled Across the Generations, Empowering Women for Over 20 Years. We have former and current faculty staff of the Women's Studies Program and Women's Center in celebration of the Women's Center's 20th anniversary. Panelists will discuss their experiences of engaging in feminist teaching, activism, and empowerment throughout the last two decades. We have Beth Barilla, Director of the SCSU Women's Studies Program, Lee Ledoux, Assistant Director and Coordinator of the Gender Violence Prevention Program at the SCSU Women's Center, Dr. Mumbi Mwangi, Associate Professor, SCSU Women's Studies Program, Jane Olson, Director of the Women's Center, Pat Samuel, former Director of the SCSU Women's Studies Program. We're very grateful to have them here with us today. Please join the Women's Center in welcoming Dr. Beth Barilla, Lee Ledoux, Dr. Mumbi Mwangi, Jane Olson, and Pat Samuel.
Hi, I'm going first because I'm the oldest. When I arrived on campus here in 1980, the Women's Studies program had been going for over 10 years. We officially became a Women's Studies minor in 1974. Now, almost immediately, we started talking about the need to have a women's center on campus. And the Women's Studies Advisory Committee wrote some memos to the powers that be and so on. But it really got underway and strengthened by the work of students. Now, in those early 80s, there was no feminist theory class. Instead, Women's Studies minors were required to take a course called Senior Seminar. And we focused on feminist advocacy and organizing. And students were required to undertake a project that would improve women's lives. Now, the reason we had this course was because we believed that in women's studies classes, we studied how sexism affected our daily lives and the institutions in society. But it wasn't to be just an academic learning. Why we wanted to know more about sexism was so that we could change society and do things to promote gender equality. So this senior seminar was trying to unite our academic learning and our practical change organizing. And students undertook a wide variety of projects. We had one group of students, or three students who all lived in Hutchinson, and they organized a Women in Transitions group down there because there was very little support for women in Hutchinson at that time. Another group undertook to write a grant proposal for the local battered women's shelter so they could get more funding for their programs. But today I want to talk about a group in the spring of 1986 who decided they wanted to work on getting a women's center at St. Cloud State. And they undertook first a lot of research. Now you have to remember, in 1986, there was no internet. You couldn't just go online and download all your information, all right? So they had to, they visited several women's centers. They called up other people and interviewed them over the phone. They wrote away to get brochures and documents about how women's centers were organized on other campuses and so on. And after they collected all their material, they wrote a proposal to be delivered to the academic vice president. And here's where they were very clever. They had listened to a lot of speeches that the, you know, the academic vice presidents, all those big suits are always mouthing off and giving public speeches and so on. So they had made a list of his favorite phrases and buzzwords that he used all the time. And they incorporated those in their proposal. They were very careful to use those. I thought that was so clever. And then they arranged a meeting with him, and they really did make quite a good impression. Now, this work was carried on both by the Women's Studies Advisory Group. We kept sending memos and requesting meetings with the vice presidents and presidents and so on. But there was also a student organization called Women's Equality Group, and that was made up of feminist students from the campus who wanted to work on improving gender equality here. And one year they organized a project, Where is the Women's Center? And they went around, they put stickers all over. Where is the Women's Center? Where is the Women's Center? Just, you know, of course, there wasn't any place. But it was a clever way to get publicity. And finally, at long last, we succeeded. And the powers that be decided there we could have a Women's Center. And we could hire a full-time director. Now, here's where I've talked about the role of students and I've talked about the role of faculty. But there are many other people on this campus besides students and faculty, and some of them are also very strong feminists. So we were here, we were so happy. We're going to have a women's senator and a full-time director. And then in, I think it was late August, Nancy Brennan, who was the interim women's studies director while I was on sabbatical, called me. She said, quick, come over. And I came over. She had received in the mail, in an inter-campus, you know, envelope, no idea who sent it, a draft copy of the notice of vacancy where they gave the job description and the requirements. It did not mention feminism. Did not mention that you had to have any knowledge of feminism or women's problems or anything like that. The major requirement was that you had 3 years experience in student development work on campuses. If that had gone out, Jane Olson would not be here, okay? And so to this day, I have no idea who sent that. I suspect some secretary or clerk over there, you know, saw this and thought, this is not going to work, and sent it anonymously. So, boy, we organized so quickly and rewrote it and demanded that it be changed before it was sent out, and we succeeded. And that's one of the reasons why we had such good candidates like Jane Olson, because now, under the new job description, they were required to have not only a knowledge, but some background in organizing for women's rights. And now I'm going to turn it over to Jane, because that's the next step.
I may be the second oldest, I'm not sure. But I've been here the second longest. And I actually wrote my comments because I had such a hard time honing in 5 minutes. And I told them I was probably going to take 6.5 minutes. They've all agreed, rightly. They've all agreed. So I did write my comments. And we are going to have about 20 minutes for Q&A discussion. So please write your questions down and think about those. It was a fun challenge to decide what story, insight, or history to bring to this panel today. Being 1 month shy of my 20th anniversary as the director of the Women's Center at St. Cloud State. Thank you. Thank you. I've been reflecting a lot in the past few months about our history, changes in women's lives over the past 20 years, and what's ahead, you know, thinking about the future of both the Women's Center, but also about women's lives and women's status. For context, I am from the Midwest. A lot of people say, were you from St. Cloud? And the answer is no. I moved here from Springfield, Illinois, at the ripe age of 31. Now you know how old I am. To embark on the journey of what I was sure was my dream job. It's been that. To be on a university campus assisting women to define their dreams and lives, to fight the age-old stereotypes that limit and disadvantage women, to fight discrimination, rape, sexual harassment, and help women deal with crisis pregnancies, and to support a world that values women and what women bring to the world has really been a dream. It's also been very hard. I remember my first day in St. Cloud, and I moved up here on the Saturday before I started my position on Monday. That's how we did it in those days. And I drove a U-Haul. I think I had more plants than I had furniture in that U-Haul. And I drove the 625 miles from Springfield and moved to St. Cloud. My first day in St. Cloud, I opened the newspaper on Saturday evening and was shocked and I don't know what other term to use, but surprised in looking at the letters to the editor in the St. Cloud Times. There was a slew of rabid anti-choice letters. And I thought, I'm the new director of the Women's Center at St. Cloud State. So it gave me an indication of the climate and the environment in which I was moving. And I had done research, but I will reiterate that we did not have an internet. We did not have email. We did not have cell phones. And I look back and I thought, our jobs would have been so much easier with that technology. I have to tell you that. On my second day in town, 11-year-old Jacob Wetterling was abducted from St. Joseph. On my third day, I walked onto campus with a pen and a file and paper to a location that would serve as a women's center, but there was nothing there yet. But there was, and I'm going to talk about that in a second. It was dusty, empty, and isolated. But I saw promise and potential, and there was tons of help waiting for that first director to walk on campus. I came to SESU with hope, experience, ideas, plans, excitement, and yes, apprehension. And I came to St. Cloud as a feminist with background in activism, coalition building, women's program, and life. And I'm almost done. But trust me, I was not the only one with hope and ideas. Students, faculty, and staff had worked very hard to get a women's center open on campus, for years actually, and they were ready to get work done. Women on campus understood the potential offered by a center organizing programming and offering services to address issues facing women. We saw the power of collective action and coalition building and activism. And women, plus a few good men, came to the center to be involved, to provide ideas, ask for help, give help, and be a part of a local movement. With concern that I'm oversimplifying, I can say that much progress has been made, but women are still experiencing many of the same problems as 20 years ago because of systemic sexism. Problems such as violence against women, pay inequity, responsibility for the majority of domestic labor, childcare, family management, racism, homophobia and heterosexism, classism, poor body image and poor self-esteem, and a leadership gap, and much more. But feminist transformation has occurred and is occurring every day. It's been work accomplished through blood, sweat, and really sometimes despair. But more often through passion, intelligence, good ideas, great strategy, as we've already heard, laughter, and intentionality. Throughout the last 20 years, the teams assembled through the Women's Center have frankly kicked butt. And our kicking butt has come in the form of changed laws, better policies, more prevention education, new opportunities for women, and enriched lives. I can't wait to see what the Women's Center and our collaborators are able to accomplish in the next 20. Thank you.
Can you hear me if I talk from here? Okay. Sometimes I get really excited and then it's too loud for the microphone. I was joking earlier with my co-panelists that I would probably write my notes right before I came thinking I was being sarcastic. And I did do that. And now that I've heard these two wonderful women speak, I'm totally redoing what I'm going to talk about. So I just want to give you a little bit of history of how I came on board. I'm the coordinator of the Gender Violence Prevention Program, which was then called the Sexual Assault Prevention Program. But I had been kind of following, I'd seen that wonderful job description. I was out west at the time. I had gone to school here as an undergrad, and I met Pat in 1980 when she first came here, and I was in the Women's Equality Group, but long before we started talking about a women's center. And laughing about technology, I found some of those old handouts we did. Sometimes they were handwritten, you know, flyers, bad old typewriters. Anyway, so technology has changed our work tremendously. But I had read the article about Jane Olson being hired as the first director, and it was in this very room. I came to one of the programs we used to do every October, right when school started, Women's History, or not, just a Women's Month with all kinds of topics. It was before we had Sexual Assault Awareness Month and Domestic Violence Month. We did our own Women's Month here. And I walked in and I saw Jane Olson, and I walked up to her and I said, "Hi, my name's Lee Ledoux, and I want to work at the Women's Center." And 20 years later, I'm still here. So I started as a graduate assistant, and one of the first things Jane had done wisely was pull together women on campus and set up focus groups to say, what do you want us to do? What's the main topics and things that you want us to focus on? And one of the things that came out of that, many topics that Jane mentioned that we're still dealing with, but issues of safety on campus and violence against women. So in one of my graduate classes, I took a grant writing class, and we wrote a grant for a position because I was determined to stay working at the Women's Center. But I had written the grant for a class project, and then Jane had taken it over and revised it. She's our wonderful editor at the Women's Center. And we did get it funded, and I had to apply for the position. And that was our focus those first few years. It was a pilot program for 2 years, and I knew we had to make this program work and we had to make a splash, because at the end of those 2 years, the university, we were really looking towards the university to pick up the position. Within that time frame, I believe it was 1991, if anyone remembers, correct me, a wonderful student from St. Cloud State University, Missy Johnson, was abducted and murdered. And so this topic became really focused in a very personal way for our campus, and that's probably led to one of the reasons that the position was funded and then picked up after those 2 years. So sometimes, unfortunately, change comes out of very tragic kinds of situations, and that was certainly true on our campus. Those first 2 years, we were the first campus in the U.S. to do a mandatory program for students on sexual violence. Not the first one to do the topic, but the first ones to do it in a mandatory way. Because we went to the students and said, at other campuses, and they said, yeah, on our campus they tell us it's mandatory, but it's really not, so people don't go. So if you're going to do it, you need to be serious. So we worked with our records office to make it mandatory, that if you didn't attend, you couldn't register, that we felt that it was that serious of an issue and people needed to know this information. And so we're still doing that program in a different format. It's online now, but that is still true. And many, many other campuses now have followed suit in terms of connecting it with registration. I just want to say a few things that I think I've learned about change over the last 20 years from some of the women here and many other women, that I never want to forget that I'm standing on the shoulders of women who've gone before me, not just women here, but women in history. And I remember what's kind of a funny story. I don't even remember the topic was, maybe Jane will. We had done some, you know, radical thing on campus. We were trying to make some kind of change, and, you know, of course, that doesn't always make people happy. And a young female student wrote a letter to the editor kind of admonishing us, you know, saying, shame on you, and how come you're not more like those early feminists like Susan B. Anthony? And, you know, I guess she thought they were more mild-mannered. So I wrote a letter to the editor reminding people that Susan B. Anthony was jailed because they thought she was so radical. So we certainly stand on the shoulders that go before us. I've learned that sometimes you have to work within the system, and sometimes you have to push from outside the system. And I think we need both. We need a combination of both. And it's always important to understand the connections. That sometimes people may wonder, why do we put energy into programs like this or other topics of sexism? But they're all connected. I always think about the end result of sexism is violence. So people sometimes go, well, how come you're involved in talking on this panel or doing this or that? Shouldn't you just be focused on the violence piece? Well, it's all connected. I'm reminded of a couple of quotes that I think inform my work, and one is I probably won't get this exactly right, but don't ever assume a small group of people can't change the world. It's the only thing that ever has. Did I get that kind of right?
Pretty close.
And I think about the stories of change that have occurred. It's been from one individual or a small group of people. I'll give you one example. In the domestic violence movement, I went to a workshop once, and all the law changes and things that have happened that we take for granted, like restraining orders, 30 years ago, those didn't exist. More recently, they've passed a strangulation law, very common, unfortunately, in domestic violence, that the victims will get strangled. And it used to be a misdemeanor, and now it's a felony level. And Minnesota changed that law, but as oftentimes people go and testify. A student from St. Cloud State testified in front of the Minnesota legislature about that law and told her personal story. Was it just her that changed that? Probably not, but she was a piece of that. And so the importance of her going and doing that. And now we have a law change that's made a huge difference in individuals, people's lives. The other thing that I think of often, or I couldn't do this work, and this is an Emma Goldman quote, I believe, if I can't dance at your revolution, I don't want to be a part of it. Mm-hmm. I know it's a little catchier than that, but that's the basics of it. And I think about the importance of humor and having fun when we do activism, that it needs to be engaging, it needs to be fun, that it can't just always be... We need to remember humor and women's gifts and contributions also. So I think that's been something that's informed my work. I think I'm going to stop there.
Hi, I'm Beth Barillo, director of the Women's Center, and I apologize for my Kathleen Turner voice, but I'm struggling with it. Some of you get that joke. I am struggling with a cold, but it was such an exciting opportunity to be a part of this panel. So many different ideas running through my head listening to all of you, one of which is just the gift that I walked into in coming to this campus, the gift of years and years of hard work that had happened before me and that really enabled the program to be where it was when I arrived. I became Women's Studies Director a year after I arrived, interim director. When I first came, Pat Samuel had just retired. And she very kindly helped me with some of the transition. Dr. Karen Flynn was then the director, and then she left to take a position somewhere else, and 2 years into my career, I became the director. And within a year or two, I'm forgetting exactly when, I helped usher in the Women's Studies major. We had a program with a minor since 74, correct? And within a year or two of my arriving, we completed the paperwork and the process of getting a Women's Studies major, which is hugely exciting. And, you know, as with all feminist activism, it may be the final product that gets all the accolades, but it's the years and years and years and years of work that's made it possible, right? So I inherited all the work that people had done to get us to that place to be able to have a women's studies major, and we're very excited about it. Think about it if any of you are interested, women's studies major or minor. Talk to Mumbi or myself. So there's that. The other gift that I really stepped into was the process and awareness of really great organizing that was already here on campus. You know, a solid women's center with Women on Wednesdays programming, excellent programming, a gender violence resource center, which I think even then was called the Sexual Assault Center. People who really knew what they were doing, were very well connected, had ongoing fabulous programming that the women's studies program was already connected to, and then we could really enhance that connection, right? I can't underestimate or underspeak the power of that And when I say process, I mean not just the programming themselves, but the focus groups, the how we go about planning programming, how do we go about finding out what people really need, how do we involve the community in being a part of this. And that really is what women's studies is about, I think. That theory and practice, the idea that how we get there matters, the process we use matters. And that's really one of the things you get to learn in women's studies classes. We talk a lot about the theory, the academic learning, but as both Pat, Jane, and all three of you actually talked about, the practice of doing it and learning from the activism. So students really get, in women's studies classes, we kind of get seen as the academic side of it, which we are, because you get academic classes. But I think it, especially with women's studies, it's a false divide between like student center and academics. There's so much overlapping, right? Because we're about social analysis to create social change, right? Women's studies is a subject matter. As I tell my students, you don't have to become feminist and wear the little costume when you leave the class, but you do need to understand it as a content matter, just like biology, economics, etc. It's a knowledge production. And you need to understand that. You can critique it, but do it well if you're going to do it, right? So learn that process so that you learn the history and you learn feminist ways of looking at the world, but then you also learn the organizing and leadership tools to do something with that. I think that's one of the really exciting aspects of women's studies. It's not just an abstract concept. It's people's lived realities, and you learn the organizing tools, the leadership tools. The very first semester I was here, I taught the senior feminist theory class. It was before we had the major, but it was still a class required for the minor, and I had a group of maybe 9 students who had worked with Dr. Pat Samuel, and they knew each other, and they were all campus leaders and organizers. They were involved in a lot of different student groups, and so in the classroom they'd talk about all these issues, but then they'd also connect it to the work they were doing in campus organizing. And that particular group, it was so fabulous, they would leave after class and they had a tradition of going out together afterwards and continuing the discussions, right? So the community developed. They did stuff outside of class in campus organizing. They helped each other out. They helped each other learn and strategize about how to do things, how to bring their student organizations together. It was really powerful. And it's that kind of systematic connection of theory and practice, and also connection between groups that we really try to foster in women's studies. And that brings me to the point of, why women's studies? You know, I think when women's studies started, it was to focus on the experiences of women because we were erased in most other academic disciplines, right? As women's studies has gotten its foothold a little more solidly, we have representation. We have also created ripples of change in other disciplines. You should be learning about feminist analysis and women's contributions in some of your other classes. And if you're not, see me. Let's talk. So it shouldn't just be in women's studies classes. But there is that component. But over time, we've also, like any social movement and any body of knowledge, we grow over time, right? And we get to reevaluate, and we get to learn things and do things differently. So initially, very few colleges had women's studies programs, and very few colleges had positions only in women's studies programs. They tended to be borrowed from other disciplines. So Kate Gill, a philosopher, right? Education, right? In women's studies, they would do the work, but they would actually be housed in other departments. We still have that because women's studies is inherently interdisciplinary. That is, women's studies needs to be represented in every single field because women's issues and gender issues are relevant in every single field. But we've also grown in academia to be able to have women's studies programs with professor lines exclusively in the program. So Dr. Mwangi and myself are both housed in the women's studies program only, which is fabulous, right? Because you're not having to straddle the expectations of 2 different departments. You can focus on women's studies. But that is still interdisciplinary. We still need the work of everybody in every other discipline. The other thing that we've gotten to learn is that what counts as women's issues keeps getting broader and broader and broader, right? Because we have to deal with issues of race, we have to deal with issues of class and cultural identity and sexual identity and ethnicity and national location with a growing global and transnational movement. And so that means that the implication of women's studies keeps getting bigger. And we have to keep being creative about how to address that. So I guess I could talk longer, but I just want to say every time Jane comes to my class, because she talks in my class, my Women's Studies 201 classes every semester, she talks about the power of students. And I really want to remind you that you as students have so much more power than you think you do, or than most students think you do. You've heard stories about the kinds of change that students have helped make happen. Absolutely, faculty and staff have been a huge part of that. But the student voices have, and labor and momentum and excitement has also been a real part of that. And I want to encourage you to keep getting involved. One of the things that Women's Studies does super powerfully is help both men and women who are involved in Women's Studies find their voice, cultivate their voice, and figure out how to most successfully make their contribution to their communities, whatever that's going to be, right? What's important to you? How can you create that change? How can we empower you to do that yourself, right? And how can we work together? So we really encourage you to get involved with Women's Studies. I want to pass it to Dr. Mwangi, but I want to plug that we have a former Women's Studies student coming next week, Carly Thompson. She was in that first class that I taught. Amazing, intelligent, active, bright young woman. She did so much change while she was here on campus. She's been courted by graduate schools because she's so good. She's now in between her master's and her doctoral program, and she will be coming back next week to do a Women on Wednesdays and a few other talks to talk about her experience. And sometimes you just need to be around the excitement of other people to realize what's possible. And I really want to encourage that. And if you want to know what's possible, then step over to the current Women's Center and remember what Jane said about what happened when she first came to campus, the cobwebs, the dirt, the nothing but a pad of paper, and look at what the Women's Center is right now. It's inviting, it's warm, it's creative, and that's because of the hard work that's made it happen. Thank you. We're not
quite there, huh? Thank you very much. I think you can hear me. It's amazing to listen to the presentations of these wonderful, wonderful women. And one of the things that has kind of resonated with me is the expression that we really stand on the shoulders of the brave women who are before us. And that cannot be truer to me, and especially when you're talking about the history of Women's Center here at St. Cloud State University. And this is not where I come from, you know. And it's amazing to see how the work of those women and these women, you know, here have actually kind of impacted me, having come from many, many, many miles away from this place. I come from Africa, and I came to the U.S. about 10 years ago, 11. And one of the things that I like remembering about my being involved with women's studies or the issues about women is when I came to do my graduate work at Iowa State University. I entered into this classroom, and for the first time, somebody told me that I can take women's studies classes. I said, goodness, what is women's studies? And, you know, you mean people sit down and learn about women? So it was amazing, and that was very late in my career, you know. I had no idea that there were studies or courses that are directed towards women issues and other marginalized groups. 10 years, no, okay, I've been here 10 years. 10 years later, I am a professor in women's studies, and that was not even my major. It's amazing to see, and this statement that we stand on the shoulders of women, brave women who have gone before us, is really very true to me, because I did not have any background of knowing what women issues are. Not that I didn't even know or experience the hardships and struggles of women, particularly in Africa, but because I was, you know, the education system never actually prepared us to see that women's issues are important issues to learn, and that you can even learn them in academic environment. So, you know, that was the thing that really embraced me, you know, that I embraced and really caught me in terms of really wanting to know what I can do with that information. Now, you know, my presence here at St. Cloud State University, of course, was from 2004, I think. Yeah, so I've been here maybe just about 5 years. And it was amazing actually to have the support of Beth and Pat to some extent, and Jane, my goodness, and Ladu too. They have all been part of my growth here at St. Cloud State University. And what I feel that I can actually contribute, or have tried to contribute as far as the Women's Center and Women's Program is concerned, is my looking at the global perspective. Right, you know, we have looked at the history of the Women's Center here in the U.S. and the issues of women here in America and everything else. But my contribution to this program and to the knowledge of the women's issues is coming from an international perspective, and that actually kind of ties very well with the present issue of globalization. You know, we cannot live in isolation. And that is one of the things that I really want to contribute in terms of really getting our students to think about the fact that we are changing system, we are changing world, and there's no way we can be able to be isolated in our own little issues and our own little backyards. You know, we have to think about what is happening internationally. And women's program, of course, has developed some programs that really give our students the kind of information and exposure that really gets them to see what is happening out there. My focus of research, of course, is African women, third world women, and it's amazing to see that some of the students respond to some of the issues that we learn in the classroom to be able to say, my goodness, I didn't know that that happens. Now, one of the major goals of this university, for example, is to educate and prepare our students to be global citizens. There is no way you can be a global citizen unless you know something about what is happening out there. And it's one thing to know about other parts of the world, but I'm also very, very specific in terms of saying, what can we do and what can we learn about those women who are marginalized, especially women from third world countries. I remember, Jane, we organized a panel here talking about the experiences of African women on campus, and it was so amazing to hear the responses of the students and say, we didn't know those kind of stories. We didn't even know the experience and the struggles of women and other marginalized groups from the other parts of the world. So globalization is an important thing, and I think we have worked very hard with Beth, and she has supported me tremendously to develop programs or courses that really give our students that kind of exposure. One of the things I can talk about, of course, that has really made much difference is the study abroad program to Tanzania. We take our students to Tanzania for about 2 weeks program, and it's so amazing. Most of those students who go to Tanzania with me come back and, you know, changed completely. Some of them have even, you know, started working with children who are marginalized here in the U.S. because of the experiences of their learning at study abroad program. The others have become much more aware, and you know, they go to report, even to have interviews in their local newspapers, talk about really what is happening in the world. And one of the things that also has happened is that they have become much more aware of the impact of HIV/AIDS, particularly right now, the HIV epidemic and the consequences of HIV/AIDS as a disease, you know, that impact our bodies, but also HIV/AIDS as a product of globalization. So the students actually just get to the next level. It's not just about the disease in Africa and third world countries, but sometimes, you know, why is it happening there? And what are some of the things that we are doing here in the US, for example, that are reinforcing the problem of HIV/AIDS in other parts of the world? What are some of the things that we are doing that are contributing to the spread of HIV/AIDS, or to the lack of actually, you know, proper means or strategies for eradicating that disease? It's amazing when students kind of get to the next level of analysis, and that's what Beth has said about what is so important for our students to take, for example, courses in women's studies. Because you are given an exposure to a feminist perspective that helps you to create or to build skills, analytical skills and critical skills, so that you can be able to see the world from a different perspective. You know, most of the times we are socialized to believe that what the world is normal. It's the norm. It's what has always been. But women's feminist perspective gives the students that critical eye that they need to be able to question even those things that we think are very normal for us, our normal everyday experiences. We critique them, we have a different critical eye so that we can be able to see the connection of, you know, the inequalities of race, class, gender, and all that, and how society sometimes reinforces those inequalities in ways that are very subtle, and sometimes you cannot be able to recognize them unless you have that critical eye. I can see the some of the telling me my time is over. But it's amazing, and you know, think about you know, how the whole perspective of thinking about maybe the work of the women who went before us have created opportunities for us to be able to even grow as individuals. You know, and what is so amazing is that sometimes you have to be exposed to that kind of thing to be able to really know who you are as an individual and your own potentials. Thank you very much, and hope that you are going to spread the word about women's center and women's studies and, you know, the amazing work we are doing, you know, to prepare students to be critical, you know, citizens, and also the future global citizens.
Okay, we have a good 10 minutes for questions and comments. And the questions can be directed at a person or any of the panelists. So now's your time to ask something that maybe you didn't hear about. Yes.
And Christine, I think about the importance of just the everyday things, that we never always know the ripple effects of that. My original notes were just stories that have really stuck with me over the last 20 years of things students have done. And sometimes it was just a conversation they had with somebody, or they were willing to confront what someone said, and it really impacted a group of people or changed how people thought of things or changed a particular person's life. Or the courage of people who transform, you know, terrible acts that have been done to them, and find, and in that healing, find the power in themselves, and that they take that on and get involved in activism and, you know, change that for other people. So.
Thank you. Other comments or questions? Yes.
I'm just wondering, when my mom taught here, she kind of told me how what it was like when students would not be receptive to learning about feminism, and, you know, they'd be pretty bold and unseeing, like, anti-feminist things. How has that changed for you? How do you kind of respond to that over the years?
How did you deal with resistance? I think is maybe the question.
I think I'd pick up on what Beth said. I always told students in classes, and of course, because of student organizing, we got the requirement in the general ed, the curriculum, that they had to take race, gender, and classes and so on. That was due to students entirely. So we then got students in our classes before, if they came to women's studies, it was more or less because they wanted it. It might have been because it met at a convenient time or something, but, you know, more or less because they wanted it. But now they had to take these evil classes in some of their minds, okay? But I always told them the same as what Beth said, that you're here to learn something. You don't have to agree with it. If you take a course in Buddhism, and when the final exam says, what do Buddhists believe about heaven? You have to say what Buddhists believe about heaven, not what you as a Christian or you as a Muslim or you as an atheist or something. And I said, that's the same way with feminism. You don't have to believe it yourself, just like if you take a class in Buddhism, you don't have to convert to Buddhism, but you have to know it. But obviously the whole culture has changed so that people today take laws against sexual harassment and so on for granted, but they still react against the word feminism, in my experience.
And maybe I can just comment on that because, you know, sometimes we tend to see as resistance as a kind of a counter to learning. I have learned in my classes that sometimes resistance also creates a situation or a learning environment, you know, and we should not be able to just shun students' resistance. One of the things that I like talking about is the fact that when you are teaching people to learn towards change, then there has to be a point of their own interaction that they have to come out of their comfort zones, right? And when you're asking somebody to go out of their comfort zones, that in itself, you know, calls for resistance. So I think it's also in terms of how we can incorporate resistance also in the classroom. And from a feminist perspective, I will not be shunned by resistance. If anything, I'll be able to use that as a form of, you know, approaching the students and be able to deal with those issues that make them resistant. Because it's something to do also with how we think education is and what the content of education is.
And I'm going to just piggyback on that, and then I see your hand in the back row. It seems to me that resistance in the classroom is also a model for interactions in our communities, right? That whatever disagreements might happen in a classroom are also happening in our communities. And so we get the opportunity to model how to interact around those kinds of issues. And I think that that what Pat said about people taking certain kinds of feminist advancements for granted, I think is super true. I mean, that I think we live in a world now where people who don't already identify as feminists sometimes think, A, it has nothing to do with them, B, we no longer have sexism, they've never really experienced it, or C, they're all evil man-hater lesbians, right? So we've got a series of boxes, all of which are, I would say, inadequate. I think that once students get into my classes, they end up finding that these issues are very relevant to them, right? And it's not just my class that the student with the eating disorder or the student whose mother was in domestic abuse or it's not just my classes those students are in. They're in every other class on campus. It's just that in my classes, they have the language to talk about it and to analyze it, right? And figure out what to do about it. And so I think that, I think the climate has changed. But I think it's important to remember that feminism is still super relevant, even if we don't want to use the word.
What's your definition of empowering? Being part of your classes and part of the center? The presentation title is Empowering Women. What's your definition of empowering?
Good question. Who wants to take that?
Well, I don't know. I don't have a very formal definition. To me, empowering people is kind of nurturing them, coaching them, supporting them so that they can come to their full potential. So some want to be, you know, work on legislation. Some want to convert their bigoted uncle. You know, they can have all sorts of things that they want to do. So empowering them is giving them the tools and, you know, the support. Because unfortunately in our society, I think most people are really pressed down. Like they're unimportant, they don't know anything, they can't do anything, etc. So giving people the courage or the self-confidence to do things, I think is probably just as important is any academic tool or organizing tool or whatever that you can provide them with.
All right, thank you.
There's one person there. There's somebody with a hand up.
Is there a hand up? We have time for, we can do one more question. Yeah. And I don't know who had their hand up.
As class structures and groups like this work on, and your experience in seeing the evolution of thought up to this point, do you feel that we as a national and global community can finally kind of unite under the banner of dispelling various ways that humans are marginalized?
Well, you know, I'm going to speak because I'm the oldest, and I have seen the changes, okay? And take how gay and lesbians used to be treated. And I can remember in my youth, leftist groups, many leftist groups, would not touch gay rights, okay? Because they said, well, even if I personally think it's okay, we can't be controversial if we want to win our feminist goals or our anti-racist goals or whatever. And I think that there's a lot more today that oppressed groups have a much better understanding. It's not perfect by any means, that there's common things of oppression and we better all stick together, or for sure we're all going to hang together.
And on that note, officially we are out of time, but I'm sure that we're willing to stick around if anybody has individual comments or questions. Thank you so much for being here.